Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Power Talk, and on this episode I am once again joined by Ben of the 401 Files, and we're going to talk a little bit about everything really. Hi Ben.
Hi Reece, how are you?
I'm doing alright. So how's the camp going?
Yeah, I have plans as well to build another camp. For anyone that's familiar with the channel, I've got a bushcraft base out in the middle of one of these hotspots on the North Yorkshire Moors. I've spent about 2 or 3 months building that, but it's been there untouched for about 4 or 5 years now. It's definitely due a revamp. So I'm going to go out to the moors, start building another shelter, and do plenty more overnight camps there as well.
I do find those videos kind of interesting, but also a little bit unsettling, especially the nighttime captures that you've had.
You know, I like that though, because it's one thing to go out into these areas kind of knowing you're not going to see something. But when you're spending the full night in a shelter that you've built in the middle of a notorious hotspot, there's no going back, because, you know, the car is like a 30-minute walk from where I've built this shelter. And so once I'm in for the duration of the night, that is it. If something goes off, if I experience something weird, that is it. I have to stick it out until the morning. And so there is that pressure. You know, sometimes when I go out filming, the car is 10, 15 minutes away from where I am. And if things go south, stuff starts happening that freaks me out, I can make my way back to the car. But with these shelter builds, when I'm spending the night in these, you know, bushcraft type shelters, they're usually right out in the middle of nowhere. And so, yeah, it is terrifying.
Are you worried about people finding your little den and, you know, just sort of being vandals and smashing it up?
Where I go, when I say that I'm in the middle of nowhere, you can just tell. I think sometimes when you're out exploring, you can really tell what the foot traffic through that area has been like. Usually there'll be telltale signs of things like rubbish, coke cans, human signs. Where I go and choose to build these shelters, you don't see any signs of litter. There's no tire mark from mountain bikes or dirt cross bikes. It's just really, really out. And I always pick places that I think people wouldn't tend to look. If you're walking through the moors, there'll be game trails. And even though they're not human made, most people will tend to follow these routes through the woods. Well, I go away from even them. So if anyone did find this shelter, it would be extremely creepy. I've had a few people over the years watching my videos telling me or trying to tell me that they know where it is and, you know, they're watching me, but it's never been touched. I leave pots there, I leave pans there, I leave duvets and pillows there. Nothing's ever moved, so I don't think that these people do know where the shelter is.
Have you ever used trail cameras? And if so, have you ever captured anything a bit weird?
Not so much on trail cameras. I have caught weird things on trail cameras. If we're talking about weird lights and things illuminating in the sky or the forest, that kind of thing. But in terms of physical objects, I've never actually seen anything running past the game camera or anything like that. However, I have heard in real time, me being in the woods, I've heard some very strange noises. I think it was only a few videos back, I was out on the moors and there was this horrible moaning. It was almost like a growl. Like, I can't even put into words what it was, but a lot of people speculated that it might have been a red deer. So I took a sample of the red deer, mating call, warning call, all these different things, and put them side by side. And actually, even those people who were saying red deer in the beginning, after hearing this comparison, said, that's actually not a red deer. I'm not sure what that is. So, yeah, very, very creepy.
Yeah, so I do admire people that go out and do what I call wild camps, or make sort of, you know, these kind of small little bases where they, you know, frequent and stuff. But it's always that kind of, when the sun goes down and it gets dark and you can't really see any further than your arm without illumination, I think for me, the mind starts to sort of go into overdrive. Have you ever had that problem?
I speak about this quite a lot, actually, on the channel. Coming from a military background, we always said that the most important part of the day was the crossover between day and night, and that's because the eyes are adjusting. And it's at this time that you might see figures, you might see shapes and shadows that resemble something completely eerie or alien to you, and it can freak you out. And a lot of people can actually go crazy in this part of the night and think that they've seen things or get terrified quite easily. Do I have this part of the day where, again, it is that crossover from day to night? I sit there usually for about half an hour, 45 minutes, just absorbing and letting my eyes adjust naturally to the light. And this is something that we used to do in the military as well, just to become accustomed. Basically, you're making the change with nature as it changes. And yeah, I speak about this a lot, because if you can allow yourself to do that, just take 30 minutes to adjust naturally to the ambient light, you're less likely to be scared when you look around in the forest and realize that it is actually pitch black. As opposed to if you're in your tent, you're on your mobile phone, looking at the bright screen, and then all of a sudden you look about the tent door, and you're like, oh, crap. Like, you know, your eyes haven't had that time to adjust. And that's when the panic sets in. Oh my God, what am I doing? How have I found myself here? I need to get back to the car. And most people who absorb through this transition will sit it out through the night. But those that don't and play on the phone or they're doing other things, and then all of a sudden they look up and realize, those are the people that will fail the solo overnight camps, in my experience.
Talking about military, one of your recent videos, you did something a little bit different. You did a sort of a bit of an urbex kind of spooky explore of an RAF base. How did that come about?
Just recently hit 20,000 subscribers, and I really wanted to do something different, something that would capture people's attention. And I've not done, I mean, I actually started the channel out doing urbex, and then it kind of just transitioned to me getting out into hot spots like the North Yorkshire Moors. Here on the coast, we've got Benson Cliffs and Flamborough Head, places like that. So I kind of stepped away a little bit from the urbex side of things. But coming up to the 20,000 subscriber mark, I had a subscriber that reached out to me and said, oh, I'd love to get out on one of your videos and come and do some filming with you, just see how it goes and what we can find. So I thought that would be a really cool idea, you know, taking one of the subscribers out with me and giving them a first-hand experience as to what it takes to make these videos. It just so happens that I know a guy, he owns some property that is a World War II military base. It actually saw action during World War II. It was bombed, and I think 13 people died there. So just on the off chance, I messaged this guy and said, look, I'm coming up to 20,000 subscribers. Can I please get on this military base? I won't be vandalizing anything or climbing through windows, breaking doors down or anything like that. I'm just going to come in with a camera and walk around talking in a vlog style type approach. Luckily, he said, yeah, that's fine. That sounds great to me. So then I contacted this subscriber and said, look, we've got the green light. Would you fancy coming along with me? I didn't want to do this on my own. I knew straight away that this would be terrifying.
Yeah.
I reached out to this guy. He said, yeah, that sounds great. Kind of a last minute thing, but we turned up there. I met this guy at the base and we just jumped straight into it, walking around and exploring these different rooms. And it is a massive place. It's like a labyrinth of different rooms and hallways and very, very creepy.
Did you experience any sort of change in atmosphere when you went to different parts of the base?
Yeah, so as we were walking around, the thing is with me, I like to absorb things on my own as well sometimes. Like, it's nice to have someone there with you filming, but if you're just constantly talking all the time in conversation, it's very difficult to absorb the atmosphere. It's very difficult to listen out to any sounds that may be happening. So I told James, you go venture around this part of the building and I'll go over this side. As it was, James found a cellar, or it looked like some kind of a cellar where the stairs led down, and it was really, really creepy, something like you'd see on a horror film. And around that area, there was definitely some vibes, put the hairs upon the back of our neck. It was a creepy experience.
Was that the video you caught a voice, or somebody whistled or something?
Yeah, so this was later on during the night. We'd been there for maybe five hours at this point, and only intermittently feeling, you know, weirdness every now and then. The majority of time we were just walking through, meeting up again at certain points and discussing what we'd found in these different rooms. But there was one point, like I said, about 5 hours into the exploration where I'd broken away from James, and I think he was investigating another part of the building or somewhere else. The plan was we wasn't going to separate too far for obvious reasons. We didn't want to get injured or not be able to find our way back to each other. And I was walking through this building. I was up on the second floor, very long corridor, dark, real dark. I've got my torch in my hand and my camera held out in front of me as I'm vlogging. At the opposite end of the corridor, I heard what sounded like 3 footsteps, which wouldn't have made sense. This was a very large staircase, 2 parts to the staircase. Your first flight, which may have been 7 or 8 steps. Then there was like a break and another 7 or 8 steps. So I only heard 3 steps, but it was definitely, in my opinion, footsteps. So I start calling out for James. James, James, is that you? There's no answer. So as I'm walking down this corridor now, in my mind, I'm thinking, is he trying to play up to this? Is he trying to make something out of nothing? Not answering my call. But I got to the end of the corridor. There was nobody there. Like, I looked over the banister, and if he had ran down the stairs, I would have heard him making his way back down these 2 flights of stairs. And the steps that I heard sounded like they were at the top of the stairs, so he would have definitely have had to made his way all the way down. And by the time I got to the end of the corridor, it just wouldn't have been possible. It could have been a noise from somewhere else in the building, potentially. However, I don't think it was. I don't understand what that was, to be honest.
You mentioned Bempton RAF base, and of course that's a classic urbex, ghosty, spooky place. There's been documented Satanism activity there, and of course they try to block it all off. And it's not a very big base, but it's got a lot of tunnels underneath, and it's a bit of a labyrinth. Of course, you know, people have been in there and taken photographs and video back in the 80s. What's your thoughts on that kind of stuff? Do you think that goes on all the time? You get these places where people use it for, like, nefarious activities?
There is definitely a link throughout all the years of me doing this. You know, there's definitely a link that ties military bases to strange phenomena, whether that be extraterrestrials like at Rendlesham, but also, like you just mentioned there, military bases seem to attract the paranormal as well. I'm not sure why people would go there to practice satanic rituals. You would assume that graveyards would be the destination of choice, but sure enough, military bases attract a lot of paranormal activity and a lot of people are interested in that kind of stuff. So yeah, there is definitely a link of something happening.
Have you got any plans to sort of go back to your urbex days and kind of mix it up a little bit with your kind of forest stuff, you know, that kind of exploring the unknown, but doing it in a, what I would call a built up area?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, Reeves, right? And I've never really mentioned this to anyone before, but there is a reason why I don't do the paranormal stuff as much. And it's because it terrifies me. I know this sounds really, really stupid, but I got into this line of work investigating these strange phenomena because I grew up in a house that was very active. I mean, I left that house at the age of 18 when I joined the military, but right up until that point, it terrified the life out of me. And even now, I wake up in cold sweats, petrified of having a dream about the house that I grew up in. And so for me, out of all the stuff I talk about, I know 100% with my hand on heart that that is real. That is absolutely 100% real. You know, when I go into the woods and I'm talking about dogmen and I'm talking about, you know, the UK wildman and extraterrestrials, those things seem very far away in comparison. We talk about extraterrestrials coming from outer space. So what's the chances of me seeing that in the forest? Dogmen, Sasquatch, I don't believe personally are living here off the land, which would then make them interdimensional. Again, very far away, but the paranormal is something that can happen at any point and very, very close to home. And for that reason, again, whenever I go into doing something regarding the paranormal, it makes me think twice because it scares the life out of me. And not to say those other things aren't real, because I do believe they are. I don't know. I can't really explain what I'm trying to say. I hope you understand.
When did you start to realise that things weren't...
So if I was to take you to the house right now where I lived and where I grew up, you would probably think I'm lying because from the outside, it just looks like a normal council house on any other council estate here in the UK. You would look at that house and think, no, surely not. But inside was a completely different story. And it wasn't just me that experienced things. It wasn't just my mum or my dad, brother and sister. The family pet was terrified. And, you know, I look back at that animal growing up and how tormented he was. But friends of the family as well experienced things. And I think for me, from a very, very early age, I used to catch the adults in the family talking amongst themselves about things that they couldn't explain. And they were clearly terrified. They were clearly baffled by what they'd experienced or seen. And that always threw me. That always made me think, what are they talking about? Like, how can my dad not know what this thing is? How is he scared? This is a big man that I look up to as my protector. You know, how is he so scared? But and then whenever I'd walk into the room, they'd always kind of like, you know, be quiet, we'll talk about it later. And as I got older, I started experiencing things myself that didn't make sense. Around about the age of, I want to say like 4 or 5 years old, I was sitting in the front living room, and I remember this very vividly. My brother and sister were at school. They were both older than me. And my mum was going to get into the bath. Now, it was about kicking out time at school. Uh-huh. And she said, I'm going to be getting in the bath, Ben. Your brother and sister might come running back at any minute. I've left the door open, but I'll be locking the bathroom door. Do you want to sit downstairs and watch TV, or do you want to go play in your bedroom? I said, I'll sit and watch TV in the living room. And after about 10 or 15 minutes, you know, usual scenario for a 4 or 5 year old boy, got really bored and thought, actually, I will go upstairs. So I knelt down in front of the TV to switch it off. And it was one of those old style TVs where when you press the standby button off, this static appears on the screen and it kind of fills up on the screen and then fizzles out to a solid black screen, which is the standby. So I did that and I'm watching the static come on the screen. And then I realized that in the corner, in space and time, this would have been over my left shoulder standing at the living room door. In the reflection of the TV was something that wasn't fizzling out. It wasn't disappearing. It looked like a heat wave on a summer's day, but stood vertically and in a cookie cutter shape of a human being with the head came down to the shoulders and it had legs standing at the living room door. Now, my first thought was that maybe I've screwed up. Maybe I've not turned the TV off properly. So I turned it back on and turned it back off. This thing was still standing there and it was shimmering just like heat wave, really bright, intense white colour. So I don't know why I made this decision, but I chose not to look directly at this thing. Instead, I just stood up and walked backwards, always looking in the reflection at this thing. Now, you've got to bear in mind, as I am walking backwards, it's actually in real space and time, just to my left, mm-hmm. at the living room door. So I sit back down, and I carry on watching in the reflection, and this thing starts to shimmer really, really violently, to the point that I'm thinking, right, I'm going to have a look at this, what this is. And it started to glide and grow in size across the floor towards me. And at one point, I just decided that enough was enough. I quickly turned and looked, and this thing shot straight into my face, whatever this thing was. I panicked, screamed, completely hysterical. I scrambled up the back of the sofa. I kicked all the cushions off onto the floor, and I jumped over the arm of the sofa and ran for the living room door where this thing had just been stood. As I got upstairs, I started to bray hell on the bathroom door, screaming, kicking it. My mum came out, and you can imagine that she was frightened and a bit concerned that, you know, her young child was talking about a figure that looked like a human being gliding across the floor. But the expression she gave me told me that she knew exactly what I was talking about. It wasn't, you know, just try to make sense of what it was, Ben. Tell me. She kind of knew already. And at that point, I realized that this must have been what everybody's been talking about. And from then onwards, the phenomena, if you will, or the experiences became more intense.
Did your brothers and sisters sort of talk to you about it?
All the time. Even more so now, probably, that we're all older. When we get together, we'll sit back and we'll reminisce on these experiences, like at family gatherings and parties. It'll always come up in conversation. My brother will say, I wish we could go back now as adults and actually research this stuff and set traps and cameras. And so, yeah, we talk about it a lot.
Have you ever got an idea or a sort of come to sort of conclusion of what it might have been?
In my belief, it was an old lady called Mrs. Bates. We spoke to the next door neighbours at the time, who were an elderly couple, obviously been there a lot longer than my parents. And apparently before they moved in, there was an old lady there called Mrs. Bates. Now, Mrs. Bates was a very religious lady. She often got visited by a priest. They were very good friends. He'd come round, they'd sit in the room, they'd have tea and biscuits, and they'd read chapters or sermons from the Bible. That's just what she did. This priest, according to the next door neighbours, had choked to death in the living room, in the front room, one time while visiting Mrs. Bates. A few years after that, Mrs. Bates tripped at the top of the stairs and she died at the bottom. There's also a spirit of a little girl in the house, but even more than that, so that's kind of like two people confirmed that yeah. Noah definitely died in the house, potentially a little girl as well, because my brother saw a little girl in the house. But when we went back even further than that and looked at the history of the house and the land it was on, it was in a place called Chapel Fields. Now, obviously, as the name suggests, it was just that. It was a big chapel back in the day that was surrounded by the fields, which obviously had the tombstones of deceased people. So who knows how many people might have been occupying that house.
I know that you're sort of working on the basics of a documentary. I don't know how far you've got. Have you taken any of that from what you've experienced in your childhood and sort of added it to this project?
I haven't, not the paranormal side of things, because for me, as I grew older, there was another experience that I had at 10 years old. And this story, I think we've spoke about this before, Reeves. It went viral all around the world. Many different countries got hold of this story once I'd spoke about it. And this was a more of an extraterrestrial type encounter. And for some reason, that is the one that's really, like, it hasn't intrigued me more, the paranormal stuff, but it's kind of the route that I've gone down. So now I talk a lot more about the UFO extraterrestrial side of things because of this account, which is weird to me, because for a large chunk of my childhood growing up, it was paranormal stuff happening, and that's what really freaked me out. So you'd think that the path I would choose to go down would be the paranormal. The documentary will be about my experience with this extraterrestrial entity, if that's what it was, right along the lines of UFOs and extraterrestrials more than paranormal.
So the UFO phenomenon is kind of, it's getting big now, and every more and more people are getting involved with it and reading about it because of, Disclosure Act and all the stuff that's going on. I'm just wondering, what do you think Space Brothers, the aliens, what do you think their agenda is?
So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, if you look at the different phenomena, whether it be cryptids, the paranormal or extraterrestrials, really the only people interested in humans are extraterrestrials. I know there's been abductions with cryptids, like Bigfoot's taken young children into his lair or his nest and things, but the one we hear about all the time is extraterrestrial abductions. And then I started thinking, okay, well, maybe they're fascinated with human biology. They're fascinated with the inner workings of the human body, and that's what all these tests are about. They're trying to figure out how we work and how we differ from them. And then I started thinking, well, not really, because if you look at the people that have been abducted, they all fit a very similar body type. They look pretty much the same. These extraterrestrials aren't abducting clinically obese people. They're not abducting 7-foot-tall basketball players or Mr. Olympia full of muscles. And if I was interested in the species, those would be the people that stand out. So they're obviously not interested in how we work or the inner workings of biology. So I thought, it's got to be something else then. It's got to be something that we're good for, or that the human body does differently or well. Not so much, how does the heart work? How does the intestinal tract work? It's not that. It's got to be something else. And for me, I think that they're using us to create hybrids, is what I believe. The other thing I thought of was, when we do tests on rabbits and rats, mice, to try and cure some of these diseases, we don't do it on live patients, on test subjects like humans. We first test them on rabbits and rats, and who knows, maybe they've got something going on in their civilization that's affecting them, and they're still yet to find a cure for it. So what they're doing is using us as the test subjects before they roll it out across their civilization, the lines I'm going down.
I had a dream once that I met these aliens, and I asked them, I said, why are you experimenting on us? And they basically said, no, what we're doing is that there's lots of us, and we all are in charge of all different races on planet Earth. It was like a game to them. It was like a game of chess. The more I think about it, the more crazy it sounds, but, maybe.
I think anybody's opinion or idea on what they're actually doing is valid. Your point there is no less valid than what I've just said, because nobody really knows. And it's a great point. Maybe it could be something as simple as that. Maybe we overthink things sometimes and think, oh, well, they're really sophisticated and, high tech, so it's got to be something along those lines that they're doing. But it could be just a game, like you said. It could just be that. I think, like I've said, it's got to do something to do with artificial insemination. I think they're using us to either repopulate or to cure a disease that's wiping them out. Just because, they'll take eggs from women, they'll take semen samples from men. And even in some of these abduction stories, the abductees are taken back and shown what they believe was their offspring. And this happens time and time again. That story comes up quite a lot when you're dealing with abduction stories. And for me, that's what it is. It's artificial insemination. Even the story of, Jesus. If you think about that logically, you actually think about what's being said, it makes perfect sense. For example, Mary was a virgin when she got pregnant. We know that's impossible. We know that doesn't work that way. But it did, apparently. According to the Bible, that's how it worked. Now, that sounds very much like artificial insemination. But more than that, if it is, that would make her offspring a hybrid, which would then explain why this hybrid who she was told would be called Jesus, would grow up to do amazing things. And to everybody else looking in from the outside, he was a miracle. Do all these amazing things, when really, they probably wasn't that amazing. It's just that he's part human, part something else. And so to all us humans, it blows our mind because we aren't that. Jesus probably could have been an extraterrestrial. Like, that would make sense. I mean, they're always talking about lights in the sky. You know, the three kings were led by a bright object, which they called a star, that took them to the place of Jesus' birth. Mary was a virgin, but she got pregnant. Jesus grew up to do amazing things. This is all right in line with artificial insemination from an extraterrestrial race trying to hybridize humans and aliens.
Before we close out this episode, I want to pick your brains a little bit and put you on the spot, because I was going to ask you, say tomorrow they turned around and said, aliens are real, they've been here for a long time, they're going to be part of society now, you're going to see them everywhere. How do you think the average person would react to that?
It's a great question. I'd like to think that we are all accepting of it. I'd like to think that we are ready for that, but I don't think we are. I think there would be panic, because for a long time, we've relied on the powers that be to guide us. The majority of people, I try not to be, but the majority of people look for guidance on how to live their life. People don't want to make decisions. They want the decisions to be made for them. And I think that if extraterrestrials came about on the scene, that would leave a lot of questions. Are we still the number one species? Are we capable of taking these out if they turn on us? Do we have to answer to them now? Or do we still listen to the government? There's so many things that would cause panic and anxiety in people.
Anyway, on that note, I know it's a scary note, but I think we've come to the end of this episode. But what I was going to say was, have you got any projects or interesting things to do over the summer months?
I'm going to try and get out and do some more sky watches on the East Coast, up at Flamborough, Bempton, Flamborough Head, Bempton Cliffs, places like that. They're huge UFO spots. Actually, Flamborough is where I had my very first UFO sighting, my only UFO sighting. So yeah, with this nicer weather, the lighter nights, I hope to get out and do some more sky watches. I'll be working on the documentary as well some more. Like I've said earlier in this conversation, I'll be building the survival shelter out in one of the most notorious hotspots here in the UK. So that's quite a busy summer.
Definitely. And I'm looking forward to some more videos and some more sort of, you know, out in the sticks, because I always find those interesting. But anyway, thanks very much, Ben. Thanks for coming on and joining me and giving me an update and letting everybody know what you've been up to. It's always interesting to hear what you've been doing. And thanks, everybody, for sticking with us and listening. And remember to give us a like and a share, or wherever that might be, and whatever podcast host you might be listening to this episode on. And until the next episode, talk to you soon.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.